Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for standing by, and welcome to GLP's second quarter FY16 earnings conference call. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. There will be a presentation followed by a question-and-answer session, at which time, if you wish to ask a question, you will need to press star one on your telephone keypad. I would now like to hand the call over to Emeka. Thank you. Please go ahead.
Welcome to our first half fiscal year 2016 earnings briefing. Thank you, everyone, for joining us today. Our presentation materials and webcast are all available on our website. Today, we will start with Ming Mei, our CEO, who will provide an overview of our results. Ming will be followed by Steve Shuey, our Chief Operating Officer, who will cover our operating highlights, and then we'll end with our CFO, Heather Cia, who will provide an overview of our financials and our balance sheet. We will close the call with a Q&A session. We encourage people to ask over the phone or send us questions via the webcast. Please note that all numbers expressed today are in US dollars, which is our reporting currency, unless we state otherwise. Thank you, and I will now hand it over to Ming.
Thank you, Emeka, and good morning, everyone. Thank you all for joining us today. Our results highlight that we are performing well in this current environment. In the first half of financial year 2016, earnings were up 42%, led by sustained customer demand, higher asset value, and development gains. Results were driven by healthy leasing performance in all the markets, as well as continued expansion of GLP's fund management platform. Our leasing performance against a weaker macroeconomic environment reflects GLP's operational expertise and continued customer demand, and Steve will cover more of this in detail. In the second quarter of financial year 2016, group new and expansion leases were up 51% year-on-year, and group lease ratio increased 1% quarter-on-quarter to 93%. We have maintained our development margins. This quarter, GLP completed $349 million of development, which translates to $40 million of development gains on GLP's balance sheet. This represents a 24% value creation margin. Our profitability is further enhanced via the fund management platform, as GLP stands to earn fees and promote of our partners' share of development gains. Development profits continue to be a recurring part of GLP's earnings stream. GLP stands to earn $200 million development value creation in financial year 2016. We also earn fees and promotes from our partners' value creation and further increases our return on development. Our growing fund management business provides a stable recurring income stream while also attracting third-party institutional capital to help fund our expansion. Fund management revenue in the first half of financial year 2016 was up 51% to $74 million. We expect $150 million annual fees, and we're on track to meet this target for the full year. Our interest in our first portfolio in the U.S. is now down to 10%. In May, we secured the partners, and this week, we also received the final government approval and received $1.5 billion cash from our partners. Currently, our total fund under management stands at $27 billion and expect to grow to $32 billion when we close the acquisition of Industrial Income Trust. The fund syndication process for Industrial Income Trust is progressing well ahead of schedule, and we look forward to making an announcement on the new investor very soon. We continue to see demand from various new and existing investors within GLP fund management platform, which continue to want to expand with us in the U.S. With the closing and further growth of our existing funds, funds management income is going to continue to grow rapidly. Now I would like to share with you what we see on the ground. Let me start with Japan, where we're doing the cough run. We're seeing the strongest leasing and the largest rental growth since IPO. We continue to raise the bar in logistic property development, from seismic isolators to Japan's first lead platinum building. And we are now introducing GLP Nagarayama. It will be the first fully integrated supply chain facility in Japan and our largest development project in the country thus far. Our Brazil portfolio is holding up despite a difficult economic situation. We continue to see healthy demand. We expect the environment could persist given the challenging political environment. We remain confident that Brazil is the right market to be over in the longer term. In the near term, we continue closely matching our upcoming development according to demand. In the U.S., we put together an excellent platform in under a year. Over a short period of time, we have amassed close to $15 billion in our portfolio. Led by a great team, our operating results are among the strongest in the industry. As a matter of fact, some of the NOI growth, same-store NOI growth, are more like a developing country instead of a developed economy. Finally, I would like to spend a little bit more time discussing China, where we currently have 50% of our company NAV. Recent economic news out of China has been weaker, but we believe we're well positioned given our stable operational performance. Some customers have been feeling the downward pressure on their profit margins, and as a result, we have seen customer turnover increase. With our retention ratio at approximately 60%, down from about 70%. Despite the lower retention ratio, we're able to increase our lease ratio by 1% to 89%, giving 1 million square meter new and expansion leases. Our leasing in China was up 29% year-on-year. Demand for our facilities is primarily based on domestic consumption, which has continued to expand and despite the slow GDP growth. Over 50% of leasing in the quarter was from consumer goods and retailers, which is consistent with our existing portfolio. The key indicators we focus on are domestic consumption and the growth of potential organized retail. Some customers are changing the distribution patterns. One interesting example is Carrefour. They are going direct to warehouse operators like us in order to improve logistic efficiency and lower costs. Market fundamentals are creating an environment where we are seeing some customers taking longer to make decisions and also looking for a rental concession. Free rent period had increased to 1.5 months today, relative to about one month we have given in the past. We have factored this into our underwriting and development yield today at about 8 and 8.5%. We're still generating about 25% value creation. Over the long term, our confidence in our China business is underpinned by long-term structural trends in domestic consumption and the country's need to replace obsolete and old logistic facilities. We have a strong network we can leverage on to serve our customer well. As always, we are very closely monitoring the logistic industry environment in China. This includes continued feedback from our customers and their plans. Finally, we're also very happy to share with you that we finally got approval from the China Security Regulatory Commissions, which paved the way for us to close on our investment in CMSTD. We are acquiring a 15% equity stake in the listed company. The equity investment is part of a strategic partnership that will create a development JV and boost development pace across China. Closing of the transaction is later than we originally anticipated, as this is a landmark cross-border transaction with no precedent. Also, approval took longer than given the environment where new shares issued is restricted. But with the help and support of our China consortium partners, we were able to accelerate this process. Again, this transaction is a done deal. The process is mainly an administrative one. Transaction expected to be accretive, as the latest share price is trading at more than double of our acquisition price. Based on the latest share price, transaction expects to increase GLB's NAV by $220 million, or $0.07 per share. With that, I'd like to hand it over to Steve to discuss our operating highlights.
Thanks, Ming. We had another good quarter operationally across all our markets, due in large part to the efforts of our experienced teams on the ground. I'm going to touch base on leasing, development, and what we are seeing generally in each market, and then talk a bit about our fund business. Turning first to China on slide 4. On the leasing front, we continue to see healthy customer demand. We signed 1 million square meters of new and expansion leases, which is up 29% year-on-year. E-commerce continues to be a significant driver of demand, although, as Ming mentioned, retention is down a bit, due in part to the evolution of the e-commerce industry that is offset somewhat by the large volume of new leases we are signing, and e-commerce continues to be about 26% of our leased area in China. Notably, this quarter, we expanded SF Express in 2 cities and Best Logistics in 3. We also see other sectors experiencing growth despite a softening broader economy, including retail, food, and auto parts. And we recently signed 48,000 square meters in 3 cities with a leading domestic TV shopping platform. This customer started leasing with us 2 years ago, and today is one of our larger customers. Our high volume of leasing again turns on our network. We build based on customer demand, and our network of customers continues to drive our expansion, with 77% of new leases in China coming from existing customers. For the quarter, we also saw same property rents increase by 4.7%, and our lease ratio grew to 89%. Notwithstanding the weaker economic outlook in China, we expect that ratio to remain between 88 to 89% for the balance of the year. On the development front, we had $370 million of starts this quarter, reaching 44% of our full-year guidance. We also had $124 million of completions this quarter, producing a 27% value creation margin on average. But we are seeing an increase in time needed to complete facilities for a variety of reasons. For example, although none of GLP's warehouses were involved in the Tianjin incident, authorities are taking more safety precautions. As such, it is taking more time to get construction and fire permits across the country. In general, over the past couple of years, the time to develop is lengthened by 6 months or so. And while the construction period itself remains consistent and stable, the pre-construction period is longer due to government permitting and farmer relocation. In addition, land supply continues to be increasingly constrained. The Ministry of Land and Resources recently announced a policy to reduce the supply of land used for industrial facilities in large urban areas. In the first half of 2015, for example, only 5 plots of land were listed for sale in the Tier 1 cities of Shanghai, Beijing, Guangzhou, and Shenzhen. This means that the supply of industrial land has and will continue to lag behind demand, as both operators and investors are finding it increasingly difficult to acquire more. Long term, of course, we believe this lack of supply in the market will benefit us even more, which is why we continue to be very focused on strategically expanding our land bank. For the quarter, we bought 860,000 square meters of land, almost 20% of which is in Shanghai, and of which 25% was through third-party sources other than the government, thanks to our investor consortium relationships. So our alignment with strategic domestic partners and access to a strong and expanding customer base continues to drive both our leasing success and increasingly vital access to limited land. And our size and scale continues to highlight our network effect, where we are able to leverage our operational expertise and asset locations to grow and serve customers in multiple locations on a size and scale that is unrivaled in China. Turning to Japan on slide 5, overall, the fundamentals in Japan remain very strong. There is significant customer demand and limited supply, which continues to benefit our portfolio. In fact, this was one of our highest leasing quarters ever since our IPO. We signed 322,000 square meters of new and expansion leases, which is up 208% year on year. One trend we are seeing is customers leasing directly from GLP rather than using 3PLs, which has led to faster and more efficient decision making. We feel this is an increasingly positive trend for us, and direct leases with end customers have gone from 20% 2 years ago to 40% today. Another trend we are seeing is the lack of supply actually driving demand. Customers who weren't considering a new facility before are seizing the opportunity now because there are so few options available. These trends, combined with the strong market in general, have taken our lease ratio back to 99% today, given us 14% rent growth on renewals this quarter, and grown our same property NOI by 4.6%. On the back of strong leasing, our development activity for the quarter was equally robust. We completed $217 million in developments at a 23% value creation margin. One of the completed properties is a built-to-suit facility, and the other is already just under 70% leased, with further development gains that will be recognized as it fully leases up. And in general, as mentioned before, with higher construction costs, value creation margins have moderated to a more normalized level, and we feel they should remain in the 25% range going forward. Year to date, we have met 64% of our targeted development completions, and leasing is ahead of expectations given the lack of supply. In fact, Greater Tokyo and Greater Osaka are at historical low vacancy rates today, coming in at 2.3% and 1.1% respectively. In the third quarter, we will start developing GLP Nagareyama, which marks our 101st building in Japan and is a landmark project for us. It will be GLP's single largest development project in Japan, and the team did an incredible job securing this well-located site in Greater Tokyo, where demand thus far is triple the amount of space we have to lease. With Nagareyama, we will meet 54% of our FY16 Japan starts target, and remain confident in hitting both our starts and completions targets for the year. So all told, development in Japan is progressing extremely well, and 90% of GLP Japan Development Venture is invested or already allocated, well ahead of schedule. Turning to Brazil on slide 6, despite the significant headwinds and difficult political environment, our portfolio has performed well as we continue pushing a tailored approach of adding supply only when matched with attractive returns and customer demand. For the quarter, our lease ratio increased to 95%, and we signed leases with Lojas Leves, one of the largest retailers in southern Brazil, and Real Quality, a leading food distributor and wholesaler. We take comfort in the fact that 100% of our warehouses are used for domestic consumption purposes, which tends to minimize disruption even during a turbulent macroeconomic environment. And as the outsourcing trend toward modern warehouses continues, we feel the long-term growth prospects in Brazil remain strong. Turning to development, not only have we already met our full-year development completion target, but we also feel that the current environment may present opportunities to acquire strategic land parcels at attractive pricing. And we were happy to secure a well-located infill site in Sao Paulo, comprising 93,000 square meters of buildable area. For the portfolio, rising interest rates in the current environment have led to a 65 basis point increase in our portfolio cap rates, with our current revenue yield standing at 10.8%. Our long-term outlook for Brazil remains positive, but in the near term, we will continue to closely monitor demand, starting new developments only if it makes sense from a leasing demand and risk-adjusted return perspective, and we will continue looking for attractive strategic land acquisitions. Turning to the U.S. on slide 7, the operating environment in the U.S. is stronger than we've seen in quite some time, and our portfolio has performed above expectations due in large part to the efforts of our team on the ground there. Customers are more confident in investing more in their businesses, which are reflected in the numbers. We had a record leasing activity for the quarter, and our lease ratio now stands at 94%, months ahead of schedule. We signed 9.6 million square feet of new and renewal leases, which is up 27% quarter on quarter, and we saw a very high retention ratio of 80%. Rent growth on renewals was up 5.3%, and same store NOI was up 8.9%. On top of leasing, we remain very focused on our two funds in the U.S. For GLP U.S. Income Partners 1, as Ming mentioned, we completed the fund syndication earlier this week, and GLP's stake is now 10%. And we have received approximately $1.5 billion of cash from the syndication and expect to book a net divestment gain of approximately $35 million in the third quarter, equivalent to the net income earned during the period held for sale. And for GLP U.S. Income Partners 2, we continue experiencing strong demand, and our target remains to reduce GLP's stake to a 10% interest by April 2016. Of course, before that, we need to close on the acquisition, which we expect to occur in early November, with a significant amount of investors locked in by year-end. And it bears repeating that the high-quality portfolio presents significant synergies with our existing assets, which will lead to improved operating performance and enhanced customer relationships globally. Finally, I'd like to talk about our fund platform on slide 8. Fund management continues to be a rapidly expanding and increasingly important component of our business. For the quarter, we recognized $38 million in fees, which is up 41% year-on-year. Of that, $23 million was asset management fees and $15 million was development and acquisition fees, all from approximately $17 billion of invested capital, with another $10 billion of uncalled capital, 85% of which is allocated to China, fund fees will continue to grow even further. In summary, we continue to see very solid and ongoing activity in our core markets, and our retention, rental growth, and leasing volume all bear that out. Solid operating performance coupled with continued growth of our fund platform resulted in a strong quarter for GLP as we continue executing on key drivers of our business. With that, I'll turn it over to Heather.
Thanks, Steve. Please turn to slide 10 for the financial highlights. Our first half result, revenue were up 5% year-on-year to $379 million. Earnings were up 42% year-on-year to $382 million. Results were driven by growth in China, development gains in Japan, GLP's entry into the U.S. market, and the absence of one-off FX losses in the prior year. Turning to country performance on slide 11. China's second quarter earnings were 12% lower year-on-year due to lower development completions. China earnings excluding revaluation were up 27% year-on-year. Japan earnings were up 44% year-on-year on the back of higher development gains. Japan earnings, excluding revaluation, were down 9% because of asset sales to the day rate and a weaker FX rate. Brazil results were impacted primarily by cap rate expansion, which is about U.S. $28 million net tax. The U.S. segment generated $18 million earnings during the quarter, given the solid leasing we saw, approximately $12 million of fair value gains driven by higher net operating income. During the quarter, GLP recognized a one-time FX gain of $13 million in others due to mark-to-market of our RMB $3 billion bond and the U.S. dollar cash balance sitting in China as a result of a stronger U.S. dollar. This was offset by higher interest of $10 million on the $1 billion U.S. dollar bond that we issued earlier the year and about $3 million of one-time transaction costs relating to our U.S. acquisition. Next quarter, we expect earnings uplift from $35 million gain on U.S. fund syndication and earnings contribution from the new U.S. portfolio we acquired. I would now like to discuss accounting treatment for the new U.S. portfolio IT, which will be earning accretive from day one. At closing, we expect to own 100% and consolidate the portfolio into our financial statements. Once we close down the syndication, then we will account for the portfolio as a joint controlled entity. Moving to slide 12, on balance sheet, GLP cash position stood at $1.7 billion at the end of the quarter. Following the proceeds from the completion of the GLP U.S. income partner warrant syndication, our cash balance is now U.S. $3 billion. Pro forma net debt to assets, assuming GLP's 10% equity stake in both portfolio in the U.S., is 15% on a look-through basis. Our IFRS NAV per share has increased by $2 to $2.52 as at September quarter end. Once the CMSTB transaction closes, we expect additional $7. Recall that IFRS NAV gives no credit to either our fund management platform or our future growth from developments. Turn to slide 13 on capital management. We have received questions from a number of you on our capital allocation and FX policies, and I would like to take this opportunity to highlight some of our existing capital management strategies. GLP's main objective are to build a strong capital base to take advantage of our value-creating opportunities, sustain growth, and mitigate risk. Our financial position today considers the group's capital requirements for the next 3 years. We have diverse sources of funds to fund our growth. That include debt, cash on the balance sheet, and third-party equity through our best-in-class fund management platform. GLP has capital discipline and remain well-positioned to selectively expand its footprint by capturing growth opportunities that create shareholder value. GLP is continuously analyzing the risk-adjusted returns available across its geographies and the business segments, and adjusts its allocation of capital to meet the evolving opportunities dictated by the marketplace. Slide 13 shows some of our key KPIs. We aim to keep our net debt assets below 40%, and today we are at approximately 15% on a look-through basis. We maintain strategic liquidity to capture growth opportunities. Today we have about $3 billion cash with an additional $1.6 billion undrawn credit facility. Since GLP operates in multiple countries and exposed to different currencies, we use natural hedge, this currency matching of revenue and costs, assets and liabilities. We also maintain a very high portion of fixed rate debt, considering the current interest rate environment. 75% of our debt is fixed. Plus, we have a long average weighted debt maturity of 5.5 years. This quarter, we have provided a new disclosure on our pro rata debt exposure in local currencies. You can find this information on page 8 of our supplementals. GLP has initiated a share buyback program. As a group believes, the shares are undervalued by the market. Since the start of the buyback on August 4th this year, GLP has bought back a total of 105 million shares, which is about 2.2% of outstanding shares, at an average price of $2.2 per share. With that, I will hand you back to Andika.
Thank you. Now let's open up the call for questions.
Thank you. We will now begin the question and answer session. If you wish to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone and wait for your name to be announced. Please keep to a maximum of 2 questions at one time and to ask them together. Kindly return to queue if you have further questions. Thank you. And our first question comes from the line of Sean Gardiner of Morgan Stanley. Please go ahead.
Good morning, Ming. Hope all is well. Two questions. Firstly, can you just give a bit of color on the one-off costs that you had in the quarter, which reflected in the net income? Because it looks like the net income was down quite a bit from the previous quarter. And then the second question is, given the pretty strong performance in leasing in China for the current quarter, at least I thought it was pretty strong, was there a positive surprise to you in terms of the leasing? And if so, is it time to think about the development starts guidance again? Were you too aggressive cutting it earlier this year? Thanks.
Yeah, thanks, Sean. I'm going to take on the question on China and the leasing, and also we consider development starts. And then I'm going to let Heather to share with you on some of the one-off, including some insurance adjustment that we had related to a fire in one of the facilities. But anyway, on the leasing, we've seen also strong, continues to have strong, healthy demand from our customers. But we also, on the other hand, we're seeing some bigger move-out than we would like to see. You know, if you look at it, we normally have about a 70% retention rate, and this past quarter we're down to 60%. So we've seen stronger, higher volume move-outs. But despite that, we still, I would say, cautiously optimistic about the demand. As I mentioned a little bit ago, that we are also seeing customers under pressure with their own margins, so we have to be a little bit more aggressive with new leases to give a little bit more sweetener. With instead of 1 month free rent, we're giving increasing to 1.5 month in some cases to get new leases signed, giving the uncertainty in the environment. So at this point, we remain I would say optimistically cautious and. And we continue talking to our customers and see what they're seeing. At this point, we think we have taken the right decision because we do have a lot more projects coming online, going to stabilize pool. So even though we're leasing, a million square meters of new and expansion leases, we still have had to be more more cautious, given the uncertainty. But I'm happy to see the demand continue to be healthy. Heather, you want to share with Sean on some of the one-offs?
Sure. On the two major one-offs, actually, all show up in other expenses. If you look at quarter over quarter, our other expenses increased about $10 million. Half of that related to actually a small fire in one of our facilities in Nanjing, which happened almost 2 years ago. The first priority when that happened, obviously, is get customer back to operation. So we advanced some money, and taking this long to settle with the insurance. As a result of a final settlement with the insurance company, we cleaned up the balance sheet and wrote off about $5 million receivables. The other remaining $4 or $5 million was really related to the one-off closing costs related to our two China transactions. U.S. transactions, the Western and Icon. The other comparables were the last quarter. I won't call it one-off, but you will see differences. For example, Japan, you will see earnings come down because Japan, J-REIT pays semi-annual dividend. So versus last quarter, we received almost $6.5 million dividend last quarter. Then we're going to see that next quarter, but then we don't have this quarter. So I wouldn't call those one-offs. But there's some other items that of similar nature.
I would say, Sean, I would, instead of looking from quarter to quarter, I would look at for the full year. We're looking at earnings up about 30% this year compared to last year.
Great, thank you. Our next question comes from the line of Donald Chua of Merrill Lynch. Please go ahead.
Hi, Ming. Hey, good morning. Two questions for me. First is on a follow-up on the U.S. cost. So the components are the insurance expenses, $5 million, and then $5 million from the closing cost for in-call. But is this the transaction cost relating to in-call's transaction final? Will we continue to see higher other expenses relating to this going forward? And with IIT, will we see such costs incur as well upon completion of the transaction? This is the first question. Second is on CMS TD. It's taken a while to complete. Could you remind us what is the strategic plan for this again? Is there any joint ventures or land that you're going to be looking to acquire from the CMS TD's parent? In which location, and what should we be expecting? Thank you.
Thank you, Donald. I'll let Heather touch more on the closing costs associated with the two transactions, not just the IIT, not just the INCOR, but also IIT, and it has related to more of a syndication cost as part of build up a fund management business. On CMS TD, just want to refresh everyone. Basically, stands for China Materials Storage and Transportation. It's the largest warehousing operating company in China that's state-owned. It's basically the legacy systems from all the different provincials and cities where they use to store production materials throughout the planned economy. And then as China opened up, they aggregate all the assets and put together a company and took it public in the Shanghai Exchange. So we are buying a 15% stake at the parent company to become the second largest shareholder, and we will assign board seats, and especially on strategy committee as well as the compensation committee we will chair. The goal is for us to come in and help them to upgrade and revamp the business and work together to make it better. But also, as part of the agreement, we will form a joint venture with them, basically to access to their existing land that they have throughout the country, because the land they have currently are a lot of legacy lands that were given to them by the central government. A lot of these lands are very infill locations, located in a city like Shanghai, where it's almost impossible to get access to new sites, and a lot of their land sites also have direct rural access, so it's very, very effective for rural and highway transportation. So the intention is to form a joint venture with them after we become a shareholder and develop those sites. So that's the strategic nature of the investment.
Yeah, on the closing costs for U.S. portfolios, this is pretty much cover everything related to ICON. But for Reston, because at this stage we're still going through syndication and closing, so there will be probably a little bit more. But for ICON, this is about it.
Right, thank you. Our next question comes from the line of Ellie Lee from OCBC. Please go ahead.
Hi, two questions from me. Can you give more color regarding the breakdown for the key drivers behind the 112 million reval gains in China this quarter? Because between the cap rates, occupancies, and rental levels assumptions, and also are we seeing market transaction values coming up similarly across your peers? Second question is, can you give us some updates regarding the syndication and completion of the U.S. acquisition? Thank you.
Maybe I give some highlight on the syndication. We completed a transaction on Anchor, and we received this week the capital cash from our partners, so that's completed. We actually had a binding agreement with all our partners back in May, but we had to wait for the U.S. government for final approval before we can receive the money. And on the transaction we have not closed yet, which for IIT will close most likely will be early November, but we already well ahead of schedule with the syndication process. Again, we have to close on the balance sheet because of due to the CFIUS filing, and then once we get a CFIUS approval, we will close with our capital partners. But most likely, we will close. We have signing binding agreement with our capital partners once we close on our book, and just wait for your government approval before we exchange cash. So with everything being said, we expect to close our complete syndication process by April of next year.
Okay. Well, before I get to detailed evaluation for China, just want to clarify, when I say Project Weston, that's really the IIT acquisition. So Weston is an internal code name. So sorry for the confusion. In terms of what's driving the valuation for China this quarter, the development gains is about $15 million. NOI or the earning, the rental increase, that's about $20 million. The remaining is cap rate changes. There are small cap rate changes in the first-year city that was a result of the external valuation based on the market, what they see in the market.
Great, thank you. Our next question comes from the line of Brandon Lee of J.P. Morgan. Please go ahead.
Yeah, morning, Ming. Just want to ask on the development completions number. I'm looking at your first half. It seems that the 200 million, it forms just over 20% of your guided 1.1 billion for FY16. Could we be seeing any downside risk to this number? And also the other question being, could you give us some color on perhaps your development starts growth and completions growth in FY17 and 18? Yeah, thanks.
Thanks, Brandon. Based on what we see and based on the projects that's in the under construction and the pipeline, we are still quite comfortable with the whole year guidance. There may be a slight miss in Brazil. Again, that's going to be based on demand. Again, our total number in Brazil is not that big, but we're going to be based on customer demand and leasing situation there. But overall, in all the other countries, we're still at this point on track to deliver the full year guidance. And again, there are going to be some up and down in the quarters. In general, we're seeing approval process taking a little bit longer in China. I think this would be probably a new norm, giving the government more focus on individual property rights, and as well as just basically the governments are less willing to, cut corners and everything by the book. So I think this is going to be a new norm, and in our underwriting, we're going to be probably taking consideration a little bit longer on the pre-development time required on the permitting approval requirement. But on the actual construction, once the permits are received, the actual construction time is still within the range what we've seen in the past few years.
Right, thank you. Our next question comes from the line of Sam Chand of Macquarie. Please go ahead.
Hello, good morning. I mean, just a few questions here. So on pre-stabilized occupancy in China, what kind of levels are we seeing right now? And then you mentioned bigger move-outs in China. Who are these tenants and what industry are they in? And then my third question is, if I'm not wrong, I heard you say 25% of the new land acquired this quarter is due to the partners. Can you remind me so far how much of new land that you have acquired is due to the partners since the close of the stake sale in China? And then also for the fourth question, I know a couple of quite a lot of questions, but the fourth question is on CMSDD. Are you still looking at a pipeline of 1.3 million square meters? I think that was what you got it before. And then I think I'll come back on Japan later. Yeah.
Okay. Well, that's more than two questions. So on the CMSDD, yes, we are on track to form the development joint venture with them to develop the land that's pre-identified. So yes, we already identify our staff that will be joining the CMSDD board as well as the personnel to form a joint venture with them. So that that's underway. And then on the partners on the China consortium partners that are able to help us get access to land, we have mentioned to you more than 25% of land was due to them, and I don't have the list in front of me, but and Bika, I can follow with you and give you a specific. But I can say that we are very fortunate and happy with the partnership and not only land contribution, but also help us access to relationships and partnerships that we otherwise would not have been able to secure. On the move out, I would say that what we're seeing, probably one of the sectors that we're seeing some consolidation is in on the e-commerce sector. We're seeing some of the players are being pushed out in the space. So they're moving out. They've been pushed out by some of the stronger competitors. But as a result, we're also seeing stronger competitors leasing more space with us. So there's a churn in the whole sector. Overall, as a whole, we increased total space leased to e-commerce to 26% of our total portfolio from last quarter, 25%. So the whole sector is still growing. But we are seeing within the sector there's some churns. I think there's another question I forgot what you asked, but we can come back to that.
Great, thank you. Our next question comes from the line of Sean Gardiner of Morgan Stanley. Please go ahead.
Sorry, I thought I'd come back with two more questions, if I may. So the first question, just you mentioned earlier, Ming, that there's a binding agreement with the capital partners for the IIT transaction. Can you just sort of describe how binding it is, if there's any sort of change in the macro environment? Are they fully committed to come in at the price you're buying it for? And then the second question is on the new Japan development. It looks like the cost per square meter is actually quite higher than recent developments. I appreciate costs are rising, but is there a risk that this one is lower than 25% development margin? And maybe you can just talk about how you'd look to structure the entity post-completion, the sort of leverage you could do on it, and the yield on cost you'd look for. Thanks.
Okay. So I just want to be clear, we have not closed the transaction on IIT yet. So we are also in contract negotiation with our capital partners at the same time. So our intention is to close the IIT transaction early November, and then either around the same time or shortly after, we will have most of the capital partners sign on as well. It will be at the same price that we paid for and share the cost of the transaction with us. And any time during the time between the government approval, the time that we will enjoy the income from the portfolio because we had to close it first. So just to be clear that we intend to have all the capital partners sign with us and you know, before the April timeframe that we have provided to you. So far, we have already received our capital partners their final approval from their investment committees. The available shares that we can allocate to, and we're expecting this will be a potential situation where we might have to do allocations to some of the partners because the demand is actually stronger than we have available allocations for. As far as development in Japan, construction costs as a whole, not only for industrial but in general, they went up by probably around in the range of 20% or more. That's due to tight labor force, as well as the Olympics and then also the reconstruction efforts going on in Japan. So this is not just applied to us, but across the whole construction sector. We are still looking at a 20-plus development margin, and the quality of building we're building is LEED, you know, gold or LEED platinum standards. And also the location of the project has a impact on the cost as well because the better location, the higher land cost. But in general, we are looking to maintain a 20 to 25% development margin in Japan business.
Great, thank you. Our next question comes from the line of Yu Kiang Wong from CLSA. Please go ahead.
Hi, Ming. Well, I have one question on China. Given the recent rate cuts, do you think it's time to start thinking about stabilized income fund? And also for China, did you give guidance for FY16 in terms of development starts and completion? My other question for Brazil, you mentioned just now earlier in the call that things are looking interesting. What kind of cap rates are we seeing in the market right now? And possibly would you be raising your stakes there? That's it from me. Thanks.
Thank you, Wakay. For China, we definitely have a lot of interest party to come in to a potential stabilized income fund. As a matter of fact, when we raised China Logistic Development Fund 1 and 2, some of the investment partners came into the development fund. They're basically asking, you know, if they would like to have first priority to look at a stabilized income fund for China. So we also within the Chinese institutional investors, insurance and pensions, they are very keen on looking at a stabilized income fund for China as well. So the demand is definitely very very strong. The question is that right now we still have quite a bit of cash on balance sheet. So we're going to be managing both on our cash available cash as well as what we think the cap rate should be. But I would say stay tuned. This is something that we very much focus on, and it's something that we are very much in the works. On the development starts, I would say I'm going to wait until probably next quarter or so to see, because I want to see a couple quarters of how the demand situations are before we give guidance for next year. But at this point, we are still pretty comfortable with what we have stated before. But I would say that given the current environment and the feedback from customers, we're going to be a little bit more cautious and wait another quarter or so to before we give more guidance on that. On Brazil, cap rate is probably averaging about 10.8%. We expect that to be stable. Giving the current interest rate environment and the GDP situation, but the demand continues to be healthy on the local consumption-driven facility requirements. So I would say that unfortunately there's no portfolio that's interesting for us to acquire because given the current level, it would be interesting to acquire assets. But at this point, we don't see anything on the horizon.
Great, thank you. Our next question comes from the line of Donald Chua of Merrill Lynch. Please go ahead.
Hi, two follow-up questions from me. First is again on the U.S. Did I get Heather correctly that you mentioned that, that next quarter you'll be looking to book a $35 million divestment gain from Incor. And at this moment in time, is the portfolio contributing in terms of your effective stake of a rental income, or is it just management fee income? That's the first question. Second question is the follow-up on the China Income Fund. I understand that given cap rates are coming down, interest rates are down, there's a lot of demand for income fund. But how do you balance the potential of this doing a fund and further earnings dilution, though, given that a construction of such a structure will lead to more earnings year-on-year downside? Thank you.
Let me start out on the first question for the next quarter income recognition. If you recall, the current recognition for ICON is that we hold 10% and the remaining 45% will be syndicated out. As we completed the syndication and receiving money actually this quarter, for those 45% that we did not recognize any earnings since inception, will be recognized at the completion of syndication, which is this quarter. So that's really related to the operation performance, the rent increase, and the operation that we had for the 45% that we have held for sale since inception.
So, Donald, you asked the right question. You know, is a constant balance between income earning asset versus creating a fee revenue for fund management business. It's going to be a balance also between idle cash versus earning a rental income on stabilized properties. So that's why from our standpoint, the urgency is not there to create immediately, but we are in talks to create that once we have our cash put into production, and then we have more asset coming online to produce income to offset the portfolio that we'll be put into a fund. So it's very much a calculated, balanced and approach. So we also don't want to time perfect either, because when the capital is there, you want to secure it. So it's going to be a factor of many many things. But we it's something that we are very focused on and very committed to do.
Great, thank you. Our next question comes from the line of Michael Lin from UBS. Please go ahead.
Good morning. When I look at the other expenses, I think you provide a very detailed explanation on the $10 million increase quarter on quarter. Now looking at the borrowing costs, it's gone up $8 million quarter on quarter as well. Can you give some color on what's driving that?
Yeah, that's really because we issued a $1 billion bond in May this year. So last quarter was only a partial quarter, and this is the full quarter impact. So you do see about, actually, $7 million interest cost increase. But the good thing is, I think people are anticipating interest increase in the U.S. It's only when. The only question is when. So we're locking in that that borrowing and financing. So that was the main reason for interest cost increase.
And I assume that it's going to be sustained over the next quarter, so next few quarters.
Correct, because there's a bond for it's it's going to be there for many years.
But we also have maturity coming up as well on others that we pay down.
Right. We also have a CNH bond. If you remember, a five-year bond is going to be due next year. So part of this U.S. bond proceeds will be used to pay that. And for the project IIP acquisition, the cash that we raised actually are putting to secure this this acquisition, taking this opportunity as well. So the cash has been put in good use.
Great, thank you. Our next question comes from the line of Alicia Leung from BlackRock. Please go ahead.
Hi, thank you for the call. Could you please explain the China Padme X revaluation increase Q on Q? The increase seems to be quite high. And secondly, could you explain the China NAV decrease Q on Q? Thank you.
Okay. The China NAV decrease was mostly driven by the FX, because as you see, RMB has been depreciating against US dollar recently. In terms of the China Tatmi, I'll break into first the valuation. That's one of the contributor. Then from an operations standpoint, the China actually has been doing quite well from an operations standpoint with increasing, stabilizing leases and also a certain rental increase as well. For valuation, China specifically versus last quarter, actually we were down mainly due to the we have a lower completions.
I think the question was mainly focused on non-revaluation NOI growth, and I think what Heather is saying is that purely from operation, increasing rent and increase in lease ratios.
That's right.
And then on the China NAV, just to answer your questions, Alicia, it was actually down slightly quarter on quarter, and that was as a result of the RMB depreciation. So China Q on Q NAV on a U.S. dollar basis for this segment was down about 3%.
Great, thank you. Our next question comes from the line of Sam Chan from Macquarie. Please go ahead.
Hi, Ming. Thanks for answering my questions earlier. Just three more. Now I'm done. So first, on I think I asked about pre-stabilized occupancy in China. So can you give us a sense of what is it right now versus probably a year ago? And my second question is on Japan cap rates. Is it still about 4.9%? And my third question is on the development in Japan, which is, you mentioned Nagayama. What's the pre-commitment there? Have you started marketing already? Yeah, that's all for me. Thank you, guys.
We actually have about three times indicative demand than we have space available for that project due to the location. It's going to be one of the first projects that have integrated functions with trucking terminals as well as storage and facility, and also customer will be able to do their pick and pack and light assembly and all in one location, so they will be able to minimize short haul transportation costs. So it's going to be a very much of an efficiency enhancer for customers to locate in one centralized location. So on the cap rate, we're looking at about similar cap rate in Japan with a slight compression. For pre-stabilized, we're seeing pretty much consistent across from our portfolio. We will be seeing quite a bit of completion over the next 2-3 quarters come into the pool. So that's why the pressure is going to be on the leasing and the stabilized pool to make sure that we're managing the leasing as well as what's coming online. That's why we, even though you're seeing a lot of new and expansion leases signed, we still tend to be a little bit more cautious to make sure that the pipeline is matching up with what we're completing. At this point, based on everything we see, we still feel comfortable with the current leasing velocity.
Great, thank you. That comes to the end of our session today, and I'll hand over to Ming for closing remarks. Thank you.
Again, thank you for everyone for joining. We continue to see sustained growth across of our business driven by healthy customer demand. We cannot change the external environment, but our business is based on long-term trends such as growth in domestic consumption and organized retail. We're well positioned in the market that we choose to operate in. This is because we have the right strategy, but more importantly, we have the right team to focus on a mission, being the best operator, creating value through development, and expanding our fund management platform. We stay very close to our customers, which give us the confidence to invest as they have good visibility into their future needs. This insight into future demand will support our development activities through the coming years. We also have strict capital discipline, allocating capital based on customer demand, In the near term, we'll closely monitor the macroeconomic environment. However, ultimately, our business is driven by domestic consumption. On the longer term, we see major opportunities ahead, given the critical shortage of modern facilities in our markets and our ability to serve the customer demand over multiple locations in each market. And once again, thank you everyone for joining.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, that does conclude our conference for today. Thank you for participating. You may all disconnect.